Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Hello, podcast enthusiasts out there in podcast land. We'd like to thank Bud Light Seltzer for being a presenting sponsor on Life is Short. Bud Light, good. That's not their motto, but maybe it will be one day. We love these drinks and we can't wait to tell you more about them, but first, the show.
I had several Jewish friends growing up, so I got to go to my share of bat and bar mitzvahs. Did you ever go to a bar mitzvah?
I went to a couple.
Yeah.
You know, both of
us. You went to bar mitzvahs.
We went to bar mitzvahs occasionally.
So later in life, I went to another one. A friend of mine, his sister, not my friend, having one, much younger sister had one. And our mutual friend, John Togo, whom we mention a lot on the show, he had a very funny moment in time, a romantic moment, with an older woman at this bat mitzvah in front of everyone. It got very passionate. And
she became very amorous.
Yes.
If you picture Fiddler on the Roof meets The Graduate.
Yes.
That's what we had. And he has since gone on to
find... He looks a little like a young Dustin Hoffman.
He does. He's gone on to find a love of his own.
Yes. Shout out to Tiffany.
We both like very much. Yeah. But I...
There's very different.
There's a little part of me that still holds out hope for the two of them.
Oh, yeah.
They had a real connection.
I'm surprised those kids didn't make it. Shout out to Birdie, too. This probably won't be embarrassing to her. And if it is, we'll cut it out. Here's the show.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your host, who seems to be getting worse at introductions, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
And with me, as always, is my... Keeping me honest.
Here's the show.
Yeah, Christian doesn't like when I say here's the show.
I think it's funny like once in a blue moon.
Well, I don't know why I got in the habit of saying
that. I don't know.
Here's the show. I mean, it's obvious that it's just a waste of time. It's just like pointless.
You know what it is? It's lazy.
It is.
It's lazy for both of us.
We used to say it as like after we had said something maybe scatological
or... It's a self-deprecating, easy way to start the show.
Yeah, and then I just started saying it.
Bad habits.
Okay. Well, I got to break them. First step to break a bad habit is recognizing it. So thank you for helping me recognize that.
You're welcome.
Isn't it nice to hear people apologize and own mistakes?
It is nice.
I don't get that a lot in my life. Anyway, yeah, Togo and Birdie had a great moment back then. I'll never forget it because Togo's an amazing dancer. And at one point during this bat mitzvah, he had an audience. People had backed up to watch him, like in a movie where
it was like a plethora of middle-aged Jewish women,
yeah,
all married,
yes,
like
yes,
drooling over him.
Yeah, and their husbands, as I recall, were all like, oh, have fun. You know, they were all like drinking and hanging out with each other. What a fun day that was. And why are we talking about this particular bat mitzvah? Well, as fate would have it, the recipient of that womanhood, I guess... Right?
I don't know if that's what that means.
Yeah, it means you become a woman.
But the recipient of womanhood?
I don't know. It's a little weird. All right, well, I'll workshop that. But the bat mitzvah...
The girl whose bar mitzvah it was is our guest today.
That's good. Simple.
Yeah.
Why do I have to dress it up? And that was the wonderful, the delightful Beanie Feldstein. Beanie Feldstein is our guest today. You probably knew that already because you saw it when you clicked on the thing to listen.
But I bet you didn't know that we were at her bat mitzvah.
And if you did, that means you're either Togo or maybe Birdie or Sharon Feldstein or Rich Feldstein. Or you're a Feldstein probably. What a fun family. And of course, Beanie's older brother, which is how I knew Beanie.
Friend of the show.
Yeah. Former guest of the show is Jonah Feldstein.
Hill.
Also known as Hill. So Beanie was, at the time, when she had this bat mitzvah, she was a bubbly, effervescent, she was brimming with, like, youthful enthusiasm. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, very fair.
Just this little ball of positive energy.
The bat mitzvah was musical theater themed.
Oh, yeah.
I think all bar and bat mitzvahs have themes, right? That may not be true.
Yeah, remember when Max Greenfield said that his was a Saturday Night Live theme?
So maybe that's why I think they all have themes. Maybe they don't. But this one did. And it was very, they really leaned into the theme, I remember. There was a lot of performing.
Each table,
she performed, and it was one of the more entertaining nights of my life, I would say.
Yeah, and Beanie had there were playbills from all of Beanie's plays that she had done in school. I remember she lining the walls. They had like a an awards room before they ever won awards. You know, those kids, they were like really into if Beanie much more than Jonah. Jonah wasn't really like a showbiz kid. Jonah's thing was he wanted to be, which he talked about on the show, he wanted to be a writer. He wanted to write for The Simpsons. But Beanie was a real, I mean, it's not at all hard to see how Beanie is where she is now as an adult. She's she has become like a Broadway performer and now a movie star. Beanie's a movie star.
She, you may know her from such films as Lady Bird. And Booksmart, Olivia Wilde, former guest of the show.
Yeah. Do we have to say that every time we mention a...
I think so.
Yeah,
I think it's nice to. They're like part of the history of the show now. Part of the fam.
Life is Short fam.
So Beanie has been in some great movies. Neighbors 2, Lady Bird.
Oh, yeah, Neighbors 2.
Booksmart.
And now she is in a new one, called, which I saw right before I talked to her, called...
How to Build a Girl.
So good. It is really good. Check it out. It was, I think IFC released it, but you can find it on those streaming sites.
It's streaming.
But first, listen to our catch-up sesh, because I didn't talk to Beanie in a while. Let's just get into it. My catch-up with the joyful, the mirthful, the very talented Beanie Feldstein.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do-do-do-do-shaboo.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, This ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
Bean, how long have you been there at Casa Feldstein?
This time or in my life? This time, over 9 weeks.
How's it going? How is it?
You know.
Are you okay?
You know. I live in New York City usually with my best friend Melanie, who's been my best friend since we were 12. And I was supposed to move out to LA to start something here in March. And then this happened. So I was planning to move for like only, you know, whatever, 6-7 months. But I had been planning to come out here anyway. And then I just decided to keep that sort of plan. I wasn't planning to live with my parents during filming that, but
right.
You know, yeah.
It just worked out that way. Pete, was that the Monica Lewinsky movie?
It's a TV show, but that we were supposed to film, but we have not started yet.
Okay, all right. Where's Jonah then?
Jonah's at his house. House. That is not our parents' house. He does not live with our parents anymore.
Right. No, I know. But have you been seeing him? Are you able to see each other?
We haven't been in the same house at all, but we have been very careful. So we'll go and like sit our car outside and like wave to him. But we have not been in the same room in months. Yeah.
Wow. Well, so it's just you, it's you, Shay, and Rich.
Me, Shay, Rich, and Jackie the dog.
Oh, my God.
Angel.
Have you had to drop, like, different rules? I mean, are there any different guidelines that Shay has to follow?
Oh, well, Shay is my mom, Richie's my dad, and Shay is, as Justin knows, one of the most... I always say, think Fran Drescher, and you're, like, 70% there.
Yeah.
And it's like 70% Fran and like 30% insane magic mania that does not exist for anyone else. But She is a magical creature from the heavens. She's a full yes. queen, but she's also, I also call her Lord Annoying. Like, her full nickname is Lord Annoying.
And yeah, yeah, that's funny.
Like, I'm like, Lord. And so I will say, like, the daytime, I'm, like, screaming at her to be quiet because she'll walk around the house with her AirPods in on conference calls, and she'll just stomp around from room to room, and I'm like, you have to pick a room. Like, you just simply have to pick a room. I'm doing work calls. I have a new movie that's on demand, so I was doing, like, interviews and press and, you know, something like this. So yeah. I'm like, Shay, gotta pick a room, girl. We have to just pick one room. But then at, like, 6 o'clock, I'm like, Shay,
of course.
Are you?
Oh, my God.
Such a pleasure to see you. We have a glorious evening together.
I bet.
But it is during the day. I'm like, Lord Annoying is.
I bet.
On the loose.
She is so overwhelmingly, like, she's fun. She's such a great hang. But I can also see it. It can be troublesome. It's funny, when you mentioned Fran Drescher, she's always reminded me, obviously, of Shay. And so when Fran was playing my mom in this thing a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yes.
And did I tell you this? Do you know this?
I know the story, but you have to tell
well,
it.
Well, so I just assumed there was this part of Fran Drescher's sister, so my aunt in the movie, and they were like, the director asked me if I knew anybody, and of course I was like, do I? You know, I was like, oh my God. I just assumed, so I texted Sharon about it, Beanie's mom, and I just assumed she would, like, leap at the chance. I don't know why, I've just always thought she was a performer. You know, she's such a, like, presence. I just thought
she
was
really
always...
delved into this during quarantine, actually, Justin.
Oh, yeah.
And really, like, Jonah was FaceTiming us when we were talking, and we, like, really thought it through of, like, would Shay be a good actor?
Uh-huh.
And the answer is, like, she literally would be the worst actor of all time.
But this is interesting.
She cannot read, let alone memorize lines. She can't read the lines. And she doesn't remember what she's done, like, continuity, looking into the camera, like, all of those things. Because she needs to be free to be Shay.
Yes, yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yes. She can't be someone else. Like, that, we really thought it through. We were like, she just simply can't be anyone but Shay. If she's playing herself, honey, watch out. Oscar, here we come.
She knew that she wouldn't be able to do that when she texted me back. She was like... And it was such a surprise, but the more I think about it, and, like, you're totally right, she's cast to be unfettered. Sharon has to be, like, it would just constrict her to have to say certain words, you know?
Exactly.
But a close second was, she suggested Birdie.
Who's my mom's best friend since they were 8,
yes.
I think.
Yes.
8 or 9.
Yes, so Birdie, and this all connects to Beanie, because I don't know if you know this part of the story, is that at your bat mitzvah, which I had the best time at, my friend John Togo, John and Birdie, who I always thought was your aunt for some reason.
She basically is. I mean, she's not technically, but when you know, 60 years of friendship, not quite, but almost 60 years of friendship with someone makes, I feel like,
that's
your sisters
true.
At that point.
Yeah, but Birdie and Togo had a very amorous connection at your bat mitzvah. It was so weird. I won't get into it any more than that, but... we always laugh about that. And Birdie ended up playing the part. She played Fran Drescher's sister. She was great.
You made her whole life. You made her entire life.
It was good for us. She helped the movie out. I don't know if I know this, Bean. Where did the name come from? Where did Beanie come from?
So I was given the name Elizabeth. That's, like, what's on my birth certificate. Elizabeth Greer Feldstein. And when I was a baby, I had a caretaker who called me Elizabini from, like, a month old, not even, from my literal birth, she would just call me Elizabini. And my brothers thought it was really funny, and they just started calling me Beanie. So from the time I was, like, 3 months old, I mean, I've watched some home videos. There's, like, a mixture of Elizabeth and Beanie for a couple months, and then it sort of starts to just be Beanie. So I always say, like, if you call a dog Spot, but you call it Spike, it's just going to think its name is Spike.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't know the
That's
legality of things.
Right.
So, like, for me, I was just like, I think it's Beanie. Like, I didn't
That's
have
so
any.
Funny.
And then eventually, obviously, I was told. And I remember every day, I mean, literally through college, on the first day of school, I had to remind myself, like, truly be like, Bean, remember to raise, like, when they take attendance, you have to say, like, I'm Elizabeth, but can you please call me Beanie? But it literally, up until my 22nd year of life, I had to be like, just remember that you have to listen out for that name, because it's so not in my instincts, like just like your natural instincts that you learn growing up of to listen to when you're called and all of these course. Things. Like, I'm not being like rebellious, and it's not that I don't like the name. It's a beautiful like a name, cool but thing. I just don't remember to listen for it.
That's so,
so
funny.
Even, I swear, my senior year of college, like at a new term, I had to be like, they're going to say Elizabeth. You have to remember to raise your hand.
Weird. That's so funny. Yeah. It's funny that they wouldn't. And so you just never went through the protocol of like changing it officially. So it's not on your.
No, bureaucracy and like authority really scare me. And I find it very intimidating.
Me too.
So the idea of like the paperwork involved to change my driver's license, my social security, like all of that just seemed really intimidating to me.
Yeah.
So I've never done it. Although I feel like the thrill of being able to say like, that's my real name would be very exciting to me.
That's
so maybe
true.
I'll do it eventually.
I know. That's one of the few luxuries I allow myself is once I made some money, I just got a business manager to do everything. It makes me really uncomfortable handling money or anything like that.
I was born with one, which is a thrill.
That's right. Yes.
My dad is the opposite of everything we said about my mom. The literal exact 180 opposite. He is quiet and pragmatic and grounded and
that's true.
Not very social, and but he is an accountant, so
yeah,
I did have the luxury
right.
of someone to help me with those things growing up.
How are they socially, like when you go to I know how Sharon is, but at a, like a cocktail party, is Rich just
I have a great example of this question, which is I grew up doing musical theater obsessively, and I did every musical at community theater and summer camp and at my high school. And so my senior year of high school, we did Pippin, and my parents were waiting in the lobby to go take their seats at Pippin. And this other mom of someone else in the show, who I had done many shows with, came up to my parents, and she starts talking to my mom, and she was like, Sharon, I just want you to know that, like, the way you've raised Beanie by yourself has been just so incredible. Like, for you to go at it alone, I just wanted to say she's lovely, and she, you know, and she's going on and on. And my dad is literally standing directly next to my mom with his arms crossed, just smiling and laughing. And she's like, and my mom is like, this is my husband, Richie. And he's like, hello, nice to meet you. It didn't bother him at all. But that has happened so many times throughout our lives.
Because he's not like a presence, like he doesn't make his presence known?
No, Shay is like a bulldozer. Like and that is her magic in the world. But my dad is so just like, we'll take a backseat, quiet, you know, not going to rock the boat.
I wonder if your mom being so extremely the other way, he's adapted to the point where he's even more reserved and withdrawn than even his nature.
I think so. My parents met at summer camp. My dad, they were both teenagers, but my mom was 13 when my parents met. My dad's a bit older.
Yeah, Rich was a counselor, right?
Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but you... I'm always, like, sick. Like, the idea of that is sick. But yes, my dad was the counselor for the boys' side. My mom was a camper. And my mom told us yesterday that she, like, aggressively went after him. Classic Shay. Uh-huh. And
together. Duh. You could have imagined that.
They've been together, I mean, pretty much ever since. They took, like, maybe, like, a few six-month breaks or something over the course of until they were, like, 18 or 19, and then they got married super young. So they've been together basically their whole lives. And so I'm sure they've kind of gone in extreme opposite directions because they have the other one to balance them out for sure.
Do you remember what it was about theater or musical theater? Because I of course remember we were just talking about that there was like a shrine to Beanie. I remember
it's
Jonah being like, my sister
shrine.
Loves... Well, it was like playbills everywhere. And you had... The one thing that I learned about you early on is that you had a... It's like an understatement to say that you loved musical theater.
Obsession. So I think the first thing would be my mom sat me down and I watched Funny Girl when I was a toddler. Like, only my mom would do that. But yeah, she's like, this is a funny Jewish girl that you were going to watch and you were going to love.
Uh-huh.
And I became obsessed with Barbra Streisand and Funny Girl in particular. And I would run around my house screaming, Don't Rain on My Parade, and, like, pretend that the kitchen chair was, like, my tugboat and I was doing the whole thing.
God.
But something that I don't know if we've ever talked about is that I had nodules on my vocal cords as a kid. So even as like a toddler, I sounded like this and I would talk to everybody like this. And so when scream, it was because I couldn't really sing. And my mom, you know, my parents took me to the doctor. I sounded like a smoker at like a year and a half. And they were like, you know, she has little like nodules, which are basically like blisters on your vocal cords from your vocal cords coming together wrong, like rubbing. And they were like, she has nodules, but if she's not going to be a singer, like she'll outgrow them. It's fine. It doesn't matter. And then I fell in love with musicals. So I started doing musicals, but I still was very raspy, kind of Carole King sounding.
Wow.
And then at 9, I came into my mom's office and I remember I just had no voice. Like I was opening and closing my mouth, but no sound was coming out. And it was so scary. So I went back to the doctor and he was like, they're very severe. And I this is what I wrote my college essay about. I just like fell to the floor and I was hysterical. And I was just like, this is what I want to do. This is who I, please, like you have to
make this
right.
Yeah.
I have to do this. It's like, you know, a figure skater or an Olympic bound gymnast, like breaking her ankle in a severe way. You're like, you have to fix this. You have to get me back. So I went to speech therapy and I relearned completely how to speak. And then I eventually relearned how to sing, which is why I speak really high. Like I have a very high speaking voice and it's because they retaught me how to speak and speaking higher is much better, like for your vocal health. So all these things, but I think it was that. I mean, when that happened, obviously I was like, this is who I am. Like, you can't take this away from me. It's so dramatic sounding, but it really kind of set the path that I was like, this is
totally
what I want to do.
And also being able, it must have really illuminated like out of in a dramatic way that it, what a test, what a litmus test for what you really care about. And when there's the prospect of that going away from you.
Definitely. I feel so lucky. I mean, to have a passion in general, but like specifically to have found it at such a young age, like a ridiculously young age, to know like at 9. I mean, some people don't find who they are, their passion, or what they want to dedicate their life to till they're, you know, at many different ages throughout their lives. So to know that young, like, this is who I am, this is the community I want to be a part of, this is what makes me happy. I don't know. I just feel like that is a real gift. I'm so grateful for that.
Knowing you, I was in my 20s and Jonah was in quite a bit older than you. But to us, it was always kind of charming and funny that this young person, this kid, had such a clear idea of what they wanted to do. That's why I think I really love hearing about your success and when you, you know, and seeing you in things now. And I don't know, it's really nice because I saw how much you loved it even as a kid. It was so apparent. It was nice. It's nice to now see it come to fruition.
I dropped my whole life, obviously, of being on Broadway. That was all I ever wanted to do, was to be on Broadway. But when I was doing community theater or even school theater, like, the stakes felt just as high.
Totally.
I was committed just as much. It's still that rush, that feeling of commitment, that community feeling of like a cast and creating something together. Everyone thinks this is crazy because Jonah was doing movies by the time I was in my like middle school years. But I never envisioned myself ever being on screen because I couldn't practice it. Whereas I felt like I had practiced theater my whole life. So I knew somewhere inside me that I could, if I could just be given the chance, I could try to be on Broadway because I had done 20 musicals and I knew what I was doing and I knew how to wave the wings and I knew
how
to... That
makes sense.
You know? And whereas with film or television, it felt like this mystical thing that like you can't emulate. You have to just be doing it in order to do it. And that, I don't think, as someone who's kind of type A and a perfectionist, that really intimidated me. I was like, how does he know how to just do it? And I think that is Jonah's gift, is he's so instinctual and he's so kind of naturally brilliant. Whereas I'm like a girl of practice. Like I felt like I really needed to learn.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because it's especially musical theater too. It makes sense. It's more of there are tools that you need, and you need to, like you said, it's you need to exercise those tools. And I think probably from your experience, the fact that you had to retrain yourself and you had to be so disciplined about that, it must have only reinforced that idea that, like, this is a pursuit. This is something that you have to really hone and craft. And but didn't Jonas doing movies, didn't that kind of demystify it in some way? Like,
no, I feel like it only remystified it. I was that's oh, not a weird. Word, but now it is. Also, I was 12, so I was like, he's an adult with a career, and I'm going to go to, you know, geometry now. He's my favorite person. So, like, that it was only nothing but positive, but it definitely felt like Jonah's an adult, and he goes and does this very amazing kind of mystical thing that involves a ton of people on a set, and he can come up with jokes, and he's so funny, and he does this thing, and I'm just going to go to tap. You know what I mean?
Like, yes. Like, I'm going to work. That makes sense, Bean, because also what Jonah does do, most of his gift you can't really teach. I mean, like, I think the most impressive thing about Jonah is something that you witness when you go to a group dinner with him. I remember introducing him to people that were actors that I would have been so intimidated by at his age, and he just would turn it on, and I could see him charming people with his wit and his sense of humor. I mean, he was just like a very
he's effervescent in a very specific way. And I think what we were saying about my mom, well, I still don't think I'm funny. Like, and my family jokes with me that I'm not that funny, even though obviously I've been in comedies. Like, I'm not the funny one in my household by any stretch of the imagination. Like, I'm sort of middle of the road. And so I think it's that more kind of apprehensive, grounded, pragmatic side from my dad that I am not sort of the creative spirit that Jonah and my mom are in some ways. My favorite thing about Jonah is that he's always willing to learn. He's so open, and he always wants to better himself, and he so wants to learn. And I think that he is so charming, but he also wants to know people because he wants to, like, soak up their knowledge.
Yeah, that's, I think, why we became friends. I loved his curiosity. But, and he, it's funny, on the podcast, that's how he spoke of you in that context, in someone who is always willing to teach him, and teaches him in a way that doesn't come from a place of judgment or
sweet. I grace. Listened to it, and I was so I don't know, moved. People always ask me what I learned from him, or like if we talk about the business or whatever, and I'm always like, we just heart to heart, like we just get mushy, like we're just. That's who we are. I mean, I love his advice, and I often ask for it, but it's more just like mushy heart-to-hearts all the time.
That's what it should be. That's
whenever
good.
Whenever we're together.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorty. I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over. Because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
you're in high school, you're falling in love with musical theater. At what point do you think, I want to pursue this, though? I mean, when does it change to that?
Well, it's so interesting. Like, I sort of never even thought about it. It just was always very clear to me. Like, even, I think I came out with jazz hands. Like, I was just, like, here at, you know, a three-year-old obsessed with Barbra Streisand and did five musicals a year. I went to a normal summer camp, but I also ended up going to a theater summer camp.
And so I was just surrounded
my whole life by my whole year, my whole kind of experience of my life by theater, people that love theater, doing theater, singing, dancing, all of it, that it was actually a choice when it came to deciding what to do about college that I went the opposite way, which was I felt that I had been so lucky. First of all, it's so lucky to have an arts education in general. So many people don't get that. And I had so much of it growing up that I felt that I hadn't explored the academic side of myself enough. Mm. I went to a super rigorous high school, like obsessively rigorous and intense and competitive academically. And I didn't always apply myself because sometimes it hurt too much to apply myself and then not succeed. I felt stupid sometimes. Yeah. Like I did not feel smart. And so I think there were moments throughout my adolescence that I was like, if I'm not going to hit them, I'm not even going to try. And I'm just going to putz around and not do anything. And I don't know. I was such an academic kid and I loved school. And then I sort of hit this wall where I was like, I'm not as smart as my friends. I'm not as smart as the rest of my class. I don't know what to do. And then towards the end of high school, I found my way back again. And I started applying myself and getting great, you know, much better grades. And then so for college, there was an infamous meeting with my college counselor that me and my parents were talking about the other night, which is my mom completely was convinced I would go to a BFA program, major in musical theater. And my dad was like, absolutely not. And I think the whole school shook. We were screaming at each other so loud in this tiny office of my college counselor. And I was hysterically crying and screaming because I felt kind of caught between two worlds. And I ended up making the best decision I've ever made, which was I went to Wesleyan University in Connecticut, and an amazing school. So, such a beautiful commitment to the arts, but it is somewhere you get a Bachelor of the Arts. It's not a conservatory, but there's so much art happening on the campus that it was the perfect balance. And I ended up majoring in sociology, which I remember calling my parents and Shay was like, what is that even? What? And I was like,
you want to go to parties?
Yeah. She's like, you social? You're learning to be social? Okay. I felt like there was this academic side of myself, this commitment to my own intellect that I had kind of given up on and then refound. I'm so glad I did it. It changed my brain. It changed who I am as a person. It changed the way I am now in this industry because I socially set scripts and stories to, I think, higher standards than I ever would have known to before kind of going on that academic journey. And I want to put things into the world that are helping or shifting society in some way, that are good in some way. And I think I crafted that morality during those 4 years at school.
When it comes to Wesleyan, I also think about how important it probably was for you to meet Ben Platt, your still dear friend.
Actually, we met in middle school at a bat mitzvah of a mutual friend, our friend Allie Nadel. And she was like, oh, you two at like the kind of pre-party, whatever it's called, the cocktail hour. She was like, you two love theater. And we started talking and we never went into the party. We just sat outside the party and talked about musicals for like 3 hours. But we didn't have cell phones. I think maybe my mom let me borrow her cell phone, but we didn't have our own cell phones at that time. So we didn't, it's so crazy now to think two teenagers or middle schoolers meet, just immediately friends on everything and can talk all day long. We were just on that cusp, so we didn't have phones and we didn't have any social media or anything. So we were just like, nice to meet you. Good night. And then he came to my school. He joined my school in ninth grade and we walked in, the first day of ninth grade. And I was like, Ben, Ben. Oh my God. And he was like, Beanie, it's so nice to see you. And we had the same lunch period and that was it. We've been inseparable ever since.
So you did a lot of theater together in high school.
Oh my, yes. We were Sky and Sarah in Guys and Dolls. I was completely miscast. I should have been Adelaide, but somehow I ended up as Sarah or just neither of the two, but I'm certainly not a Sarah. But we were Little Red and The Baker and Into the Woods.
Yeah, Beanie, I just loved hearing you guys do that song from The Baker and The Baker's Wife and Into the Woods. That was really beautiful.
Oh, I loved that so much. That was such a beautiful, I don't know, I felt like if I could have told my 9-year-old self that I would be singing for Stephen Sondheim and he would hear it, that's A. And B, like with that lineup of those performers that I have grown up on and idolized and worshipped my whole life, it's still kind of a surreal. And with Ben and doing Into the Woods, which we did in 10th grade together, it's so surreal. But it was so special.
Your 9-year-old self probably would have fainted if they had known they were going to work with Bette Midler. I mean, that too is like, that's like Barbara level.
I mean, you grew up female and Jewish. There is no one like Bette Midler. I'm stuttering. Yeah. It's literally still, like, I know her personally.
That's
I love
funny.
Her.
You're still lost for words.
I'm still literally unwell. My mom, actually, this is not to focus all on every time I lose my voice, but when I was, I just graduated from college. I had like another little vocal scare and I was on voice rest and it was right around my birthday. And my mom had gotten me tickets to go see Bette, like for her and I to go see Bette in concert in New York. And I couldn't say anything because I was on voice rest because I had like another little vocal injury. But my mom was like, you just were all eyes. You just watched and you like mouthed along to every lyric. She did this huge, incredible show. I filmed like all of it. I was crying. It was like the best birthday gift I'd ever been given. And a year and a half, 2 years later, I was in the rehearsal room with her. Like it's completely surreal. Like completely and utterly surreal. She is heaven.
So you were able to tell her, you were able to like properly express.
I wanted to play it semi-cool.
Right,
I mean,
you can't do it right away.
We're talking about Hello Dolly, and the entire cast was announced. Well, first they announced that Bette was coming back to Broadway as Dolly, and I guffawed and like tweeted about it. Was like, this is the best thing to ever happen to my life as an audience member.
Uh-huh.
And then they announced the entire cast, like everyone working on the production, creative team, etc. And then at the bottom, it was like Minnie Faye to be announced at a later date. But they had the entire like 40-person cast.
Oh, wow.
Set in stone, but they still hadn't found a Minnie Faye. And then I was filming Lady Bird, and we were doing the scenes where I sing in the film, and our producers were also producing Hello Dolly, and they thought, well, I don't know, why don't we give Beanie a shot?
Wow.
And I auditioned, very strange for Broadway, it's such an avant-garde experience. I auditioned in LA because that's where we were filming, mm-hmm. with a casting associate and a pianist. That's it. Like no creative team, no dance call, because they were really they had announced the whole cast. They were rehearsing in like the next month. And I auditioned just in a room, the three of us, and I sang Elegance and I did the monologue. And then I came home to this room because I was staying with my parents during Lady Bird, working as a local. And I was like, anything to be a part of that movie, I'll stay with Shane.
Yeah.
And I was in this room and I got a call from my agent and he was like, I was like, oh, does the tape not work? Like something messed up the audio on the tape. I have to drive back. And he was like, you got it. And I was like, I don't understand what you're saying. Like I actually don't understand what you're saying. You're lying. And I just kind of like got angry.
This is not a funny joke.
I was like, this is not funny. You're lying to me.
Uh-huh.
And then when he kind of eventually convinced me, I was screaming. My dad, Richie, cried. My mom cried. We were just a magical moment in my life.
And that's so awesome, Bean.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, yeah. And Bette, the greatest lesson I've learned from her is to never stop working hard, because she works harder than any other person in the room in a way that is insane. Like, you have to, as you know, you do so much theater, you have to have an equity break. Like, per the union, you have to break for 15 minutes every
Yeah, they're very serious about it, to the minute.
3 hours, 4 hours, equity 15. And Bette never sat down. Like, she'd be rehearsing choreography. She'd be figuring out exactly how to take her jacket off in the exact way that would make it the funniest. She would figure out how to open and close the door to the set to give it the biggest punch. She never sat down. She's Bette Midler. She was 71, I believe, when we started rehearsals. Turned 72 throughout the run. And that was, I mean, she's the funniest person to ever walk into a room. I mean, she's so... There's more comedy in her pinky finger than in my entire body.
Was she always cracking jokes? Was she always on?
She's not doing bits. She's just the funniest person. Yeah. To have the funniest thing to say. Tough as nails. She just led by example in the most remarkable way. And but it was my Broadway debut. I was 24, 23 when I started. And I just thought, well, this is it. You get to watch Bette Midler in the rehearsal room. And
where do you go from there?
This is it. You don't go anywhere, really, Justin. Yeah. You're just kind of...
That's so great.
Crazy.
And then, and also, a lot of, like, really brilliant female performers, directors. Greta Gerwig, you mentioned on Lady Bird, you got to work with Olivia Wilde. I mean, they're two of the best. Two of the best directors, period, working. How would their styles compare to one another? How do they contrast, would you say?
Oh, that's so interesting. I don't know if I've ever been really asked that. I don't know. It's so hard. It's also unique in that Greta wrote the script herself and then directed it. Whereas Katie Silberman, one of my dearest friends, who is beyond brilliant. Her and Olivia, their collaboration was so beautiful to watch. Whereas, you know, just a completely different process because you're collaborating between two people and then, like, doing something by yourself. Greta changed the course of my whole life, like truly changed my entire life. That movie changed my life. It changed my career, but it also just changed who I am as a person, I think. Not to be too grandiose, but like...
No, how so?
She's just the most thoughtful, giving person and writer and director. And her movie that she made that I got to be a part of showed me that there are stories that meaningful that could exist to me. If I had encountered that movie, not as the person who played Julie, but as an audience member, as a teenager, it would have completely altered the way I felt in the world. I think there, and I don't know, I mean, because musicals have their own thing and they're larger than life in their own ways. I just didn't know that a story, I could be a part of storytelling in a way that could like pierce my heart so much. Uh-huh. I remember reading the script for the first time before I even got to, I mean, I knew I was reading it to play, to audition for Julie, but before I even got to when Julie was introduced, reading that scene of the two of them in the car, of Lady Bird and her mom in the car, I just thought,
that's really beautiful.
What is this? How does this exist? And how am I getting to read it? And then, you know, and then I flipped a few more pages and it was like, Julie, chubby, loves her friends, loves theater, like hard on her sleeve. And I just was like, what? this is too good to be true. I don't understand how I'm getting to read this right now. And I auditioned with Greta. She read Lady Bird and I read Julie. And I remember saying to myself, just listen, because she's willing to read with you. Just listen.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, I always am kind of self-conscious that that's not as my best skill as an actor. And I just was like, just listen, Bean, just listen. And I remember skipping out of the audition room. I've never skipped out of anything. And I was just light. I was like floating. I ran into one of my best friends from Wesleyan on the street and I was like, Gabe, hi. And he was like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, I don't know. Something amazing just happened.
Are you on crystal meth?
Yeah, literally. He's like, Petey, you've never done drugs. What did you do at like 11 a.m. on a Tuesday? You know, you went to Wesleyan without smoking weed and somehow I feel like you're altered right now. But she just changed. She set the precedent for what I want my career to be.
Because you just felt so good. You just felt like you had nailed it.
I just was skipping because I just felt transformed by reading with her. I felt like I was talking to my best friend, but obviously I'd never met Greta Gerwig before, but we were just... I think that the greatest gift both of them have ever, and Cokie, who directed How to Build a Girl too, but with Greta and Olivia, they set us up for success. They created a space that was so warm and so safe that you just couldn't help but do your best because that's what was being, you were just so taken care of.
Sure. And I think trusted them too.
I trust them with my everything, and I right. would jump in front of a car for both of them. Well, I think
hopefully the they biggest, won't ask you to do that.
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, maybe not today. But I think the biggest difference would be their energy. Like, Greta has a calm kind of a calm laser focus energy,
yeah.
and Olivia has a
let's do this.
Yeah, she is like a fiery laser focus yes. energy. She is. Yeah. She's so full of life, and she's like jumping around. And her every day was like a different amazing sneaker that she would wear. And we shot at night, and it was just she has this like fiery, fun energy uh-huh. that is electric. Yeah. Whereas Greta has this like grounded, quiet, focused energy that is electric. But the way their energy manifests, I would say, is very different. That's the biggest difference.
But yeah, but still a passion. Like they're still exhibiting a passion.
Oh my. God, yeah, they both have tunnel vision, Olivia's, but Greta's is sort of quiet, yeah. and Liv's is like sparkly kind of. She was so confident, and her confidence was infectious, and it made us feel confident. And when she said, "We have it, we're moving on," with like a smack and like a you know, like a fist in the air, you're like, "Yes, we got it, we're moving on." You trust her, whereas with Greta, it's like this much quieter kind of gentle energy, but with that same feeling of confidence and trust. She was so emotional behind the camera. She was really with us in the scene, and I don't know, she would cry and she would laugh, and she was so
she was like a participant
giving, so giving in that way. And
it's like being what you said about Jonah, like how he has like this insatiable curiosity, and he collects things. He's like a great collector of things that he admires. And so that's probably what made, I mean, mid-90s, I think, is such a good movie. I think it's such an impressive debut for a director. And it's like you said, he's been soaking up and just mining all this information from some
Since
of the best
he
directors.
He was a child, by the way. He could literally recite you every episode of The Simpsons, I think, for the first 25 seasons. Like,
he was
obsessive about music and about skateboarding and movies. And it's so funny because I'm obsessive too, but I was always obsessive about musicals.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I'm on the past 5 years that I've been being a part of making films. I feel like this great student. I'm like, I know nothing. Please teach me everything.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Whereas Jonah is such a cinephile, I am sort of like, it makes me embarrassed sometimes or nervous or anxious that I didn't grow up that way. And so this is a brand new journey for me. And I don't, I ask any camera department I've ever worked with. I'm like, why are you putting that on now? Why are you moving
that's
that?
Great.
And
it's
what
good,
does
B.
that do? And why does that? And it's like, I just want to learn. I just want to learn more.
Well, it's also probably served your relationship, and I'm probably made you guys closer. And he alluded to this, was that because you were into such different things, and because the age disparity was such that, like, there was never, like, it wasn't like competition. He was like, she was just this adorable little, you know.
What did he, what is he, a basketball with eyes?
Yeah, yeah, a basketball with arms.
Honestly, still true. Still a vibe. But
are you now able to kind of commiserate a little bit more and connect with him on that level? Like, I get this thing.
Well, I mean, yes and no. He's so great. He's given me such amazing advice, but I still feel like he's always had movies in his head. Whereas I'm just kind of starting to learn how to create movies in my head and
speak that language
and speak the language. And it's been such a fun new ride. It's kind of bizarre to me. I just never thought I could love anything more than theater, and I love film just as much. And it is a shock to the system, truly. Like, you spend 22 years of your life doing something, and then you spend 5 years doing something, and it doesn't feel. I thought I knew myself.
I'm fascinated, Beanie, by the fact that you couldn't just have the nodes removed. You had to teach yourself to almost like speak above them.
They don't want to do that, especially like when they don't have to, and especially with kids, because kids are really, they heal much quicker than adults, and you can sort of, because you're not fully formed yet, like as a body or as, I mean, obviously as a mind as well, but you can kind of unlearn behavior and then relearn it. They caught it at a good time.
Okay.
And sometimes the surgeries are not, you know, as
successful as
others. There's more risk. So they wanted to start with the speech therapy and the voice therapy before they attempt, if and see if it worked. And I'm so lucky that it did. I never had to have anything surgically.
Are you able to go into that other register, the one that was troublesome? Are you able to speak like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it's so funny. I am so haunted by that whole experience. Like, anytime I lose my voice, whether it was because, I don't know, I was having fun and enjoying a night, like, yeah. or I'm sick or whatever, it's like, it feels like trauma. Like, it wow. produces this fear that I'll never be able to sing again. And because of that, I am not a very confident singer anymore, which is a really wow. kind of interesting journey that my friends and family yeah. are really helping me with, because they're like, you were on Broadway. And I was like, I know, but but I'm not naturally an amazing singer. And it took so much work and so much anxiety to kind of get me my voice back and get all these things aligned that, I don't know, it really does make me self-conscious. I've never really talked about it before, but it's something I really want to work on. In the same way that some people, like, I'm really not plagued by body confidence at all. Like, I'm a naturally very body confident person, and I think I know a lot of people that struggle with that. Yeah. My thing is my singing. Like, I can't hear it. I can't hear wow. it the way it sounds. I don't trust it. I don't.
Well, psychologically, it makes total sense that you don't want to, like, you said it perfectly. Like, you don't want to love it too much because you then fear that you may be losing it. The fear that you may be losing it one day.
100%.
It
might go away from you. I'm really, this is like therapy, Justin. I really am learning so much.
Do this regularly.
I would love it.
Well, really quick, I want to talk because you're doing promotion, you said, for How to Build a Girl. And I was lucky enough to see it. You're so good in this, Bean. Fortunately, I'm not complimenting your singing. I'm just complimenting your acting, so you can take this compliment.
I'll try.
It's a true leading performance. You have to carry the movie. I don't want to give it away, but it's kind of a rock and roll coming of age story where you get caught up in the world of rock journalism and a little bit like almost, there's some Almost Famous parallels.
Definitely.
And the first thing that struck me was your accent, just how strong your accent was. And and the rest of the cast, for the most part, great actors, Patty Considine and Sarah Silomani.
The best.
Oh, just great, great actors. But all British, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Entirely British cast, except for me.
So yeah. how do you get, you have a dialect coach, it must have helped to be around them, but did you ever feel intimidated to be in the midst of this authentically British cast as an American actor?
So it takes place in Wolverhampton. Basically, Catelyn Moran wrote the book that How to Build a Girl is based on and adapted the screenplay herself, and it's also very loosely based on her life. So my character, Johanna Morgan, is a fictionalized version of Catelyn. But Catelyn has lived in London since she was about 17, doesn't speak anything like she spoke as a child. Completely
Weird.
Different. Because the second you move away from where you're living, you're exposed to so many different other accents that you sort of morph and change. And also she was trying for a lot of, at the beginning of her career, she didn't want people to know she was from Wolverhampton, so she would sort of morph and change her accent.
Put on a more kind of highbrow London.
Yeah, exactly. So, and in the UK, accents are so linked to identity in a way that we could never really understand. I mean, we do have, like, of course, Southern and Midwestern and, like, New York, New Jersey, Long Island has its own, you know, thing going on. So Wolverhampton is also a completely underrepresented town in British media. Like, it is either, like, the butt of a joke, it's just forgotten, and it's left behind and it's left out. And Catelyn is such a kind of triumphant success story of this town that I felt so much pressure to get her accent right.
We
knew that I had to go to Wolverhampton because the accent just doesn't exist. I mean, honestly, YouTube search it. There's like two videos of Wolverhampton on all of the internet.
Wow.
And so I knew I had to go there. And the director came up with this crazy idea that I should work in a store in the town for a few weeks.
That's great. That's so cool.
I worked in this store called The Shop in the Square for almost 3 weeks. I shook hands with her and I looked her in the eye and promised her I would speak in the accent the entire time I was working, whether I was like talking to customers or ordering lunch on a lunch break.
This is like a dream. This is a dream.
Well, it was also like, as a sociology major, I was like, I wish I had enough time to write the ethnography of this experience because this is so fascinating.
Yeah.
But It was the most immersive thing I have ever done and maybe will ever do as an actor. I mean, it was so full on and so unique and magical and mystical in some ways.
How long did you like work regular hours there? You worked all day there?
Yeah. So I worked like, wow, you know, 7-hour shifts or whatever. And I would help them restock. It was this kind of feminist utopia of a store. It's all of these local female artists that sell their work in a cooperative style. And so I got to meet all these amazing...
It's like Portlandia.
Literally.
Yeah.
If I hadn't gone to Wolverhampton, it would just be Southerners or Northerners' guesses at what that really is and what that feels like and what that sounds like and their impression of what Wolverhampton is versus going there and getting to be open and create my own impression of the city. They recently became a city only about 20 years ago. Something I learned in my time there. It used to be a town.
Oh, Wolverhampton trivia.
Oh, there you go. I kept saying town and they were like, we actually became a city in 2000. And I was like, I am so sorry. And I went to Catelyn's, the house that she grew up in on the council estate where she grew up. And
did it look like where they shot it? It's such great locations. It's such like working
the
class.
The match for it was amazing. We were in Watford, just outside of London to match the exteriors of Wolverhampton. We did do one day in Wolverhampton, like the scenes where I'm running to the train station or get hit with the book by the kind of
Oh, that was great. It's great because it says, the narration says, and that's, I mean, it's also funny. Then that's when it hit me. That in the beginning, the bullies. Yeah.
I know the impact a great book can have.
Yes.
Something to note is that that was not supposed to, it was supposed to fly over my head and on accident. Our very
it looks very natural.
Prop master threw it directly at my face, and thank God because he created such an amazing moment. In the film, and it was
allegedly totally on accident.
Of course, allegedly. But it was a life changing experience in so many ways. But I think of getting to create that character and with that creative team and cast and crew and be welcomed so openly by this. I mean, it's a truly British story. It's so uniquely British, and they took a chance on me, and I feel so proud and lucky. And
Bean, you probably can't talk much about Monica Lewinsky because I know you haven't shot it yet. But are you watching a lot of footage while you're home? Is that how you're preparing?
Yeah, you know, I really can't say anything. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, all right. You can't say if you're preparing.
I'm guessing you're preparing. You could guess that I am preparing for the role of a lifetime, certainly.
All right, we're breaking this. This is the scoop. And also, what about Merrily We Roll Along? You probably can't talk much about that, but that's Richard Linklater is going to shoot over the course of 20 years. Is that true?
20 years. Boyhood was about 13, but there is...
God.
Rick Linklater is like... I don't know. He just had a retrospective of his work at the Pompidou in Paris, and I was with my family in Paris over the holidays, and I went to it. It's one thing to watch his movies, but then to be inside all of them at one time, I don't know, I got really emotional. He's such a sweet, earnest man. He's so thoughtful and kind.
He must be very patient.
So he's the most patient director you'll ever meet.
Is that true that it's going to be 20 years?
It's going to be 20 years, yeah. And wow. Ben and I have loved Merrily our entire lives. We used to, like, sing it on the way home from school. I mean, we're such nerds, Jess. It's so embarrassing.
No, the nerdiness is going to pay off.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do-do-do-do-shaboom.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled BABBEL.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply. If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
All right, Bean, this is a really quick lightning round. Sorry, ooh. I know we're going a little past past the time. What is your most commonly used emoji, would you say?
I was thinking about it because I know that I had to be thinking about it. And
oh, this is a big one.
It's a big one. I think it's the girl with one arm up, like saying, hey.
Hey, here I am.
Hey. Because it's kind of like nerdy and awkward if it's used specifically, but then also anytime I get a new friend's number, I always like say like, hey, it's Bean, hey.
It's like non-threatening, it's innocent.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are all things I like to convey too. I like that. Maybe. If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play?
Gymnastics. 100%. I love gymnastics. Okay. I couldn't do it if my life depended on it, but I have so much admiration for it, and I follow it, and I love it.
Okay. If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
You know what my answer is? It's just chocolate chips.
Really?
Yes. Me and my best friends from Wesleyan, we would keep chocolate chips, and we'd sit around our kitchen table at night and eat them together, and that was like our little catch-up time with each other. And just
so you have a nice memory associated with it.
Yeah, and it's like continued into my adult life now. Like the friends come into our apartment, they go straight for the chocolate chips.
And this is a tough one, I know. So I've been amending it. What's your favorite movie of all time? Or I could say in quarantine, what's a movie that you feel has been the most comforting to revisit?
Okay, so I have two, Bridesmaids. It's just Bridesmaids.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I actually haven't watched it in quarantine yet, but I've seen it probably 200 times. Like, that's not an exaggeration.
I love that movie.
I saw it my last week of high school with all my best friends at midnight, and it's one of my favorite, like, movie-going experience memories ever. But I
and
think
all
it
about
also,
friendship.
All about friendship. And I think it also just showed me that, like, women, funny women could be valued and, like, beloved and celebrated in the same way that
totally
so many dude movies have throughout my whole life, and then get nominated for Oscars and all of the, and give women all those women opportunities beyond that, and it just I don't know, I think it just gave me hope. I was like, wow.
If you had to live somewhere else, where would it be?
London.
Did you shoot in
we shot 99% in London, and then just one day in Wolverhampton, just because of like money, that's what we had to do. But my girlfriend lives in London, and so I'm kind of long distance back and forth between. And I love the UK. I think I'm an honorary Brit at this. I don't know if I can give myself title, but between that of a girl and now my girlfriend is, well, she's from Liverpool. She's a Scouser.
Oh, what a great accent.
Such a good accent. I mean, her brothers, when they're drunk and it's loud, I'm like, every other word.
Well, it's all up front, isn't it?
It's like,
all in the front.
That's fucking sick. That's fucking sick.
That's funny.
It's so good.
How long have you been dating her? And is that something that you talk about?
Yeah, you know, we've been together almost 2 years, which is really
crazy. Oh, wow, Bean,
crazy.
I didn't know that.
We met working on How to Build a Girl together, and she produced the movie. She's the best. We call her the baby boss. She's like a She's just a boss.
Not to be confused with Boss Baby.
Not to be confused with Boss Baby, although, okay. You know, her and Alec Baldwin really have a lot in common. That is who she reminds me of. No, I'm just kidding.
That was my next question. If you were to date a Baldwin brother in a woman form, who would it be?
Totally. You know, here's the thing. I'm so lucky to get to do what I do, and I am so grateful. And if I can just be open and be myself in whatever kind of section of my life that means, and it can help someone be closer to being open and comfortable with their selves, is that the right English?
Yeah.
Then that is beautiful and important to me in some way. Not to get too on my high horse about it at all.
Yeah, of course.
I believe in being open. It's who I naturally am. It's who I intrinsically am. I love Bond so much. She's my favorite. She's the best thing to happen to my life. And I was really inspired. I was listening to Kristen Bell's episode of your show. Her and Dax are so open about who they are in their relationship. And I don't know. So I kind of inspired by her. I mean, I'm inspired by her in so many ways. But
yeah.
I'm just a naturally open person. It would feel against my character to be closed off. That's just not who I am. But I also think, like, if someone can look at me on screen or on whatever Instagram or whatever, something like, you know, like this, and say, like, you don't have to be a size 2 to be worthy of, you don't have to be, you know, even if it's my body or my who I'm in love with or whoever, like, it's better for and easier for me and more natural to me to be open. But I also have been so kind of in my life as an adult and as a young person, been so grateful and inspired by those that are open and given opportunities. Like Melissa McCarthy, her whole career is so inspirational to me in every way because she is the most talented person to exist. But also I never got to see women be funny and celebrated and nominated for Oscars and just fully who they are. And so for me, it's like, if I could be that for someone else, boy, is that a gift to me. It's important to me to just get to openly celebrate her because I love her so much, Bond. But also, like, if that can make someone feel a little more comfortable with themselves or a little more brave, then that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Being well said. I think that's really beautiful. And because unfortunately we live in a time where people do still, certainly in parts of this country, struggle with
that.
I'm sure, you know, so it's not, we're not there yet. So if you can, if being open means making it easier for somebody, that's really cool. It's really admirable.
And I have to acknowledge, like, I am in the most privileged position in so many walks of life, but specifically, like, I grew up in a very progressive, open, accepting community, family, city, and religion, and I am so lucky because when I fell in love with Bond and discovered like a different, I always say like I'm a late bloomer. Like this was never something that I was sitting on and didn't tell anyone. And if that's your story, that is so valid and so important, and you should tell it. But that is not my story. My story is not this secret or this thing I understood about myself that I wasn't ready to open up and tell. That's not true. What is the real story is that I was such a late bloomer. I didn't think I'd ever be in love. I never cared about that side of romance or intimacy or anything. Like, I just didn't care. And Jonah used to call me Dexter because he was like, you are you are literally so mean and icy and you're the warmest person in the world. But when it comes to like romance, you're just like the ice queen. You're fully like... like a serial killer of relationships. And I was, you know, he literally called me Dexter. I was so cold.
Yeah.
It was not something that I...
This is like throughout college, Bean?
Yeah, throughout college. I just... Wow. I loved, and I have so much love for the Met, specifically like my boyfriend during college. I love him, but I was not, something was missing. And then I met Bond. And I was like, this is what they fucking write songs about. Like, oh my God, I'm not Dexter, but I didn't know. It was not something that I was closing myself off to or not communicating. It was just something I had yet to discover.
You hadn't discovered it.
I was so, you know, in my mid-20s, like, had yet to discover. So I also think that's an important thing to share. Like, the late bloomer narrative is so underrepresented in our media. It's like the second a girl character turns 16, it's like, or, you know, it's like, what's happening with the virginity plotline? Like,
right, you know, exactly.
And I was such a late bloomer, and also late bloomer in discovering, like, who I love and who I am in that way. So I like to be open about that because I never saw that.
Well, it's amazing being that in this you had this experience while shooting this movie, because for people who haven't seen it, the movie is all about discovering that and discovering love and self-love too. And
yes,
what an experience that must have been. I mean, what a transformative.
It was life-changing in many ways. I bet.
That's great, Bean. I'm so happy for you. People can't see this because we don't record these. I mean, we don't put them up. But you're like, you've changed color.
Oh my God, I'm so blushing. Hot.
You're blushing, you know. It's really nice to see. I just so crazy about you. It's nice to see you so happy. It's really great.
I love you. Yeah. I want you to meet Bond. She's in Liverpool, quarantined now. But she's
in Liverpool.
Yeah, with her family. Yeah. But one day soon.
Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah, I might annoy her because you mentioned Kristen Bell. Kristen and I do a similar thing where we have a hard time not repeating what the person said in their voice, in their accent, especially when they have an accent.
I was listening to it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, please. Be guilty of that. Go for it.
Just give her a heads up. That's what I do.
No, she'll love it.
If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, whom you've never met, who would you pick?
Carole King.
Okay.
Eleanor Roosevelt. Usually I would say Stephen Sondheim, but I got to Zoom call with him.
Yeah.
I haven't met him, but I got to meet him over a Zoom call. Does that count? Shonda Rhimes, maybe? Shonda Rhimes in there.
Sure, why not? Shonda would be recording the whole thing and wanting to make a show out of it, which I would watch that show.
I watch that show too.
Who's your favorite Muppet, Bean? I think I know the answer to this.
What do you think the answer is?
I would say Fozzie.
Oh.
No, yeah, I don't know.
No, I feel good about that. I feel good about that.
If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Oh, I don't know if it's a superpower because it's like a Harry Potter magical power, but to apparate. Uh-huh. Like to just be like, I want to, because I'm in a long distance relationship. I think that's where it comes from. But it's like, uh-huh, I just want to be, I hate flying. So if I could just I'm there, snap my fingers and I'm somewhere else, that would be
great.
A great gift.
Okay, apparate. If you could be one age for the rest of your life physically, what would you pick? It's tough to ask somebody who's so young that question.
It's a great question. I feel like it's going to be empowering to be, I don't know, like my late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah.
That feels like a really, like, you're grounded. You're, like, you're less self-conscious. You're like, all my friends that are that age are, like, they just own who they are. They're very confident, but then you still have so much more of life to lead.
I got to say, Bean, I felt that way over the last couple of years. I felt a lot more kind of, there's a calm, there's a not needing to try as hard maybe.
Yeah. I'm reading Amy Poehler's book again.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, please. And she's talking about how she used to want to please people so much and kind of, that's so who I'm kind of stuck in that phase now of like, I'm just like, sure, whatever you want, walk all over me, like it's great. And
I'll do your podcast.
Start with me. You know I love you like family, and this is such a gift. And I love your podcast as a listener. But I am. It's hard for me to kind of stick up for myself.
Yeah.
She talks about the kind of learning to do that, and she just gives great examples of when she's done it in her life. But
yeah,
I think by that age, I'll have kind of re-grabbed that. I had it as a kid. I was like so demanding and spunky, and as you know. But I think I've lost that a little bit. So I feel like that age would be a good time.
Oh, that's I love that. If you could, would you rather be called unattractive or unfunny?
Oh, unfunny, totally.
Yeah,
I think the most kind of searing for me would be like, not kind or like unkind.
She's unkind, or she's not respectful.
Well,
Bean, I think it's always what you value the most, and you clearly value. Yeah.
I don't care.
Which Golden Girl do you most identify with? Dorothy, Blanche, Rose, or Sophia?
Oh, Blanche.
Yeah.
I think Blanche.
But Blanche, I always think of as like just, she's like a Tennessee Williams. She's like a good time Charlie. You know, she's just like a good time.
kind of dramatic, like fabulous. I don't know if I like
dramatic.
If I identify as much as I just like love people. Like, I mean, I grew up with Shay. I think I just love that.
Yes.
Sort of, less, I guess, identify and more just sort of love to be around that type of energy.
I agree. Yeah. Which do you prefer, dogs or cats, Bean?
Oh, I am deathly allergic to cats. I despise them. Oh. This is one thing I have a strong opinion on. I fully, I hate cats with every fiber of my entire being because they make me so sick that I can't breathe and I won't live.
I didn't know that. The hatred really
began when cats became allowed to fly on airplanes because if a cat is on an airplane, I can't be on that airplane. And it is...
It's that... You're that sensitive.
Yes, and it is so... I'm going to text you a photo of... Oh, I guess I could just show it to you. I want to make sure the audio works.
Okay, yeah.
I have a photo of... I was once in a house that had a cat, but I never saw the cat. I didn't interact with the cat. My face looks like a filter, like a Instagram something, like crazy distorted filter. I hate cats so much, but it's because I'm deathly allergic to them, which I
there are certain breeds of cats that I found that I'm extremely allergic to the point where I used to go out with this girl and I went back to her house and I just lost, like my face had blown up and I was sneezing and all that. And I was like, a cat, you're sure you don't have a cat? And she kept saying no. And then I was like, oh, it must be something else. I don't know what it is. She goes, I mean, I had a cat like months ago. And so it must have been still.
I'm a bit psychic in general, but I have like a sixth sense with that, which is I once actually was visiting Jonah on some press thing or something, and I walked into this house and I said, do they have a cat? And they're like, the previous owner had a cat years ago. And I was like, this is like a sixth sense.
But you're right, that shit doesn't go away.
That shit goes nowhere. It clings.
Okay, duly noted. I will never ask you that again. Beatles or the Rolling Stones do you prefer? Do you have a
Beatles for sure. Yep. And also now Bon grew up in Liverpool and she grew up on Penny Lane.
The
Beatles is like her family and that I love that city much. And Beatles for sure.
The Basils, good answer. Bean, do you ever think about, you're so young, it's silly to ask you this, but do you ever think about how you want to be remembered, what kind of legacy you want to leave behind?
Oh, that's such a beautiful question. When we were filming, before we filmed How to Build a Girl, as you said, it was like the first time I ever was the only lead of a film. I had come straight out of Booksmart where Caitlin and I together got Caitlin Deaver, the brilliant, effervescent, my angel.
Oh, she's so good.
She's so good. It's like sickening. Yeah. But we got to share this incredible responsibility of leading, you know. But for How to Build a Girl, it was my own kind of, it was my first time doing it alone. Mm-hmm. And I thought a lot about, because I had been so lucky to be led by such brilliant leaders in my career as like, because I've done so many kind of, just get to learn from so many people around me that I thought like, I kept thinking about their kind of impact on me. It's not legacy, of course, but like their impact on me of like Saoirse on Lady Bird was the most giving, generous, spirited, just force and Bette and all of these people that I've been lucky enough to work with. And I just thought, what do I want them to remember me with? And I remember just saying like, I don't care if anyone thinks I'm a good actor. At the end of the day, I don't even... I'll be able to sleep at night if I messed up a scene, but I will never be able to sleep if I hurt someone or I didn't respect someone. And for me, it's just like being a good, conscientious, respectful person, but also like person within society. I always want to make sure people are treated equally and treated with respect. And that is what I want to be remembered for, I think.
Bean, that's so beautiful. But I also think it, not to make it about your work, but I think that radiates. I think that comes across in your performances. Aww. I think that is...
Thank you.
I like that you have that ambition at such a young age. And you, I'm just so happy for you, Bean. You mentioned Booksmart, and I know a lot of people compared that to Superbad. And obviously that like scene where you go to, when she, Caitlin picks you up, like there's certain parallels, but I found it so unique and different, and I love both movies, but I thought same. What Olivia was doing in that, and you know, I just think that there's such different movies, and I think what you do in that, and certainly in How to Build a Girl, is really special, and special in a way that is different than how special Jonah is. So I'm proud of you for.
I love you. That means so much coming from you.
Yeah, and you know how much I respect him, but I'm telling you, you're forging your own path, and it's a really like it's so fun for me to watch you travel that path and have success on it. So. Yeah, thanks for doing this, Pat. It's good to see
your
face. This
is the best. This is so good.
Yeah.
Send your whole family, especially your brother, my love, too, because I love
you. I will. Thanks, Bean. You're the best. Proud of you.
So that just happened.
That happened.
Wait. Hold on a second.
Oh, wait. What? Oh, well, so that happened.
Oh. Sorry, I'm not doing this fully sober.
Oh yeah, that's right. You've had you're a Bud Light Seltzer deep.
I'm one Bud Light Seltzer in.
So you're on your second.
If I sound a little crazy, that's why.
Yeah, although I had five. We were talking about this on the drive here. I had five Bud Light Seltzers last night and didn't. I mean, I don't know if I should be bragging about this, but I didn't really. I felt like a nice kind of.
Glow.
Yeah.
But you did so responsibly.
Oh, I didn't drive anywhere. I was watching a sunset. I didn't even interact with anyone.
They really go down easily, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they do. And they're...
This is not an ad.
No. No.
They really do
I don't
go
know
down easily.
We should be proud of that. This is just us. This is our lives. We're talking about our something we enjoy. Anyway.
Back to Beanie.
Something else we enjoy. Ah, Beanie. Isn't it surreal knowing the way we knew her as a kid?
Well, not to make it about me, but it really makes me feel old.
I know.
That
I know.
She is not only an adult, number one.
I know.
But
I know. That alone, but, I haven't gotten alone, past.
But such an accomplished, thoughtful,
yeah.
mature adult.
I know.
It's really, really makes me feel old.
You know what phrase I hate, which I almost said, like adulting, when people say like I'm getting the hang of this adulting thing.
I don't like that either.
Yeah,
you both adulting. Have to not like adulting.
Maybe I just don't like doing it either. I don't like what it means. Anyway, Beanie's doing it very well. She's adulting like a champ.
She is. She is definitely grown up. And I think I was thinking about this. Is she our youngest guest that we've ever had?
Oh.
Typically, we have guests who have a little bit more miles under their belt. That's not a term.
It is, I think. You're dancing around because you don't want to be offensive.
Yeah, but people are older. That's
I
know. Not offensive.
Why should that be offensive? But it is.
But I think part of...
Elderly.
One of the things you get from being older is a bit of perspective on your life. And,
yeah.
you know, I think it helps make a conversation more interesting when someone has a little bit more, some experience. But
good and bad.
Good and bad, but... Even though I think she's our youngest guest.
She's really only had good, she's had a lot of good, she's had some bad
I will say she is remarkably thoughtful and she has a really mature sense of a perspective on her young life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that comes from, and I think this is rare, when people have very clear goals and very clear sense of themselves. Mm-hmm. And their identity and what their passions are. And I think she is an example of someone who from, you know, birth, basically, has been very aware of who she is and what she loves to do.
Yes. And has a confidence that belies her years. Is that proper?
Well, I couldn't weigh in until you finished the sentence.
Oh, but it belies her years, right?
Yeah, I think that's like saying...
It runs counter to...
Exactly.
Yeah.
She's young, but she has a more mature perspective.
But she, as buoyant, and I mean, the way we described her as, you know, bubbly is... There's something condescending about the word bubbly. I'm trying to avoid saying that. But as that, as she was as a kid...
Yeah, bubbly, I think, can be misinterpreted
as dumb,
for ditzy.
Ditzy, yeah. Like, who would be bubbly? Like...
Oof. Like Suzanne Summers in Three's Company.
Great reference. Thanks. Yeah, exactly. Although that character did some, or Betty White's character, or Rose in Golden Girls.
I don't think she's so ditzy. I think she's more dim than ditzy.
Oh, yeah. Harebrained? No. But anyway, Beanie has always been, even as a kid, which is how I knew her better, she had a tremendous amount of confidence, you know?
Yes.
Like an unusual amount of confidence for a kid. I'll never forget meeting her. She charming and present.
But again, I don't think it's confidence in what she was doing. I think it was more confidence in knowing that she loved doing what she was doing. You know what I mean? I think there was different.
Yeah,
she even talked about that. She has insecurities about her singing.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that surprised me, in fact, because like you said, as a person, she is so... She just strikes me as somebody who doesn't question her behavior or... I mean, not in a bad way.
Yeah.
In a really good, in a really admirable way.
It was funny when you were... Because the last time I saw her was... Maybe the last time you saw her in person, we ran into her in New York at a restaurant with eating lunch with her mom and Ben Platt.
Yeah.
And we had not seen... Dear Evan Hansen yet, but I knew who he was, and
yeah.
You know, I knew he had some juice. You know, people were talking about him.
He was at Seymour's,
yeah, in
New
York.
That place. That's right. I didn't know him either. And wait, what were you gonna say?
Well, sorry. I was gonna say I was struck then by how grown up she was,
uh-huh.
And also I was gonna make fun of you for, because we ended up seeing Ben Platt's play, and had we seen it before meeting him, I would have been like a nervous mess around him. I'm so in awe of that person.
You are.
I should save it for hopefully a future Ben Platt episode.
I know.
But when you were talking to Beanie, she was talking about going to Wesleyan, and you very confidently said, and that's where you met Ben Platt.
Oh, really?
Like, I don't know why you were so sure that she met... And she was like, actually, I met him in high school.
Why did I think that?
It's funny when you go in really confidently...
Yeah.
And
nope.
That, ladies and gentlemen, changed everything.
Yeah, because
that is when you met Ben Platt.
Yeah, well, because I'm not very often that confident. So maybe
it's funny to be wrong and like super confident and super wrong,
uh-huh,
at the same time.
Confident nerds are a funny thing that I notice. There was a guy yesterday who did a confident nerdy. Oh, at the dump we go to. Christian, I go at the dump near where I live in Massachusetts. There was a guy who... It has this confident, he's like a nerdy authority.
We go there to dump garbage, by the way.
Oh, yeah,
we don't just go there.
To chill.
Yeah.
It's a great spot to meet people. But I asked him, like, I held up some garbage, and I was like, is this recycling or garbage? And I want to know if I should put it in this receptacle. And he just gave me, this is maybe a more visual thing, but he just gave me this very, like, nerdy, condescending point. It was like a like he didn't say anything, but if he had, it would have been like right in there.
Yeah, a lot of shame in that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but Ben Platt special.
Oh, so Ben, but yeah, you're right. We saw it, I think we got in touch. Sharon Feldstein, her mom, who was at that lunch, I think, was like, oh my god, you have to, because she's the one that saw us and was like, you got to come in and see Beanie. And, oh, Ben Platt is there. And you know Ben Platt. And we were like, we don't really. Christian was like, yeah, I've heard of him. And so we had this nice lunch with them. And Ben was very sweet. And Beanie was great to catch up with her. And then when they left, Sharon was like, oh, my God, you have to see Dear Evan Hansen. And Christian had wanted to see it. And so she got us these tickets.
It was very nice.
Yeah, Sharon really hooked that up. So a couple days later, we saw it. And, you know, the rest is...
My brain melted.
Yeah.
And I haven't stopped thinking about it since. And yeah, yeah, I like her relationship with her mom. They're very, they're like best friends.
Yeah.
It's really nice. And it reminded me of when we lived with Jonah, how he would refer to his parents.
His roommates.
As his roommates.
His ex-roommates.
Yes.
Yeah.
But like, I know he was kidding, but there's something about that family's dynamic.
Yeah,
they all genuinely seem to like each other.
They're really friendly with each other. I know that's a weird thing to say about family, but often I think that's a rarer thing than it sounds like, that a family should be such good friends.
And they also don't seem to really let age get in the way of their friendships with each other.
Yes,
that's why, I mean, it's funny that he called them roommates, but in a way, it seems like how they see each other.
Yeah,
you know? They're all kind of equals.
Even when I talked to Beanie about being in, because she had been in quarantine for a while, they'd been in the lockdown in LA, and I was like, oh, how is it with Rich and Sharon? And kind of like fishing for some dirt about like how annoying it might be to live with them, spend some. And she was like, you know, they're great. I mean, it seemed like she was into it.
Their parents sound very similar to our parents in that they're very different.
They
figure out a way to make it work.
So Rich, the dad, is like our dad, a lot more stoic and, you know, cerebral, which is not to say he, you know, and then Sharon's just a lot like our mom, a lot more outgoing and, you know, sociable.
Yeah. The Richard Linklater movie. I forgot she was doing that.
Yeah.
20 years
is crazy.
Crazy. But she seems like a good person for him to have picked for that role because...
Well, so does Ben Platt.
Exactly, because neither of them seem like they're going anywhere, number one,
right.
In terms of their careers. They're like on this upward trajectory. Mm-hmm. But they also seem so passionate about what they do that it's not like at year 17, they're like, you know what, I don't want to be an actor anymore. I'm going to go do something else.
Yeah, that's right.
They're perfect for those roles.
Yeah, I remember didn't we talk about this? Like, what happens if you cast somebody in that and they're like, who knows what's going to change in 20 years? What if they're like...
I want to go be an accountant.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people leave acting all the time, or it gets to be especially acting because it's such a grind.
But she's always loved it. It was funny. Yeah, she was talking about how she like literally can't remember a time where she... didn't want to be in musical theater on Broadway. And at a certain point, you were like, oh, so when in high school or college did you make the decision to pursue acting? Uh-huh. And she was like, always. I've always wanted to do it.
Like right out of the womb.
So incredulous.
Yeah. I could picture her like right out of the womb. Just like
hello, my baby. Hello, my honey.
Someone get this placenta off me. Hey, are you my mom? Where's my dad? Is he? Oh, man. Are you imagining a little infant and a little...
I am, with a top hat and a cane.
Yeah.
Hey, let's read a letter.
Okay. All right.
Let's see the top one.
This one from Ben?
Uh-oh.
Platts.
Maybe it's from
Could
Ben
Could it be?
Fingers crossed.
Don't you really want him to listen to the show?
More than anything.
You're like, you're just like
I'm
flushed.
I'm getting flushed.
You got flushed. Remember when we were watching the celebrity watch party thing and we realized that there were like three more of them. There were other Platts that were their voices were just as angelic.
There's like generations of Platts.
Yes. Yeah, that kid is just incredible. Okay, this is from Ben. Letter from a teacher. Dear Justin and Christian, Dodgeball came out when I was in high school, speaking of feeling old, and at the time I looked so much like Justin that classmates... I didn't know it. My large high school began to approach me and ask me when I had filmed the movie. Oh my God. I started listening to your podcast on a tip from one of your remote producers. Shouts to Mike Moody in Austin. Oh, Moody. Yeah, we love Moody. Moody owns a bunch of fun bars down there. Anyway, because I had the Mohawk, if you've ever been, because I had enjoyed quite a few of your roles in my formative years. Recently, as I began driving more for meetings and planning to return to teaching maybe this fall, I've started digging back through your older episodes with guests I'd initially skipped over. Luis Guzman was an episode I ignored, I think in part because of the roles he has played. It had caused me to make assumptions about him as a one-dimensional person. Huh. Chelsea Handler was another I didn't think I'd enjoy because I was not at all familiar with her work. Perhaps this is a nice life reminder that everyone has their story and deserves a chance to be heard. That's really cool, Ben. Yeah. Yeah, what a great letter. And he has some would you rathers. Great. Would you rather be a Ghostbuster, meaning deal with some fucked up stuff, but still be able to clock out, or a superhero with cool powers, but always on the clock? Ah, that's a good question. Mm. That is really good. You know, I never consider the superhero question with the negative aspects of it. I never enough.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
I think I'm lazier than you. I always think about how annoying it must be to always have to respond to the bat signal if it comes
out. Oh, no. I don't mean that. I don't mean the, like, being a famous one. I just mean one that has these powers. So, like, In other words, if you could see through things, let's say, if you had X-ray vision, is it always on? Like, can you turn it off?
Oh, see, I don't think that's what he's asking, though. He's saying, he's making it about the workload.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah. Would it be incumbent on you to always do something? Yeah.
I would pick, just because he's not specific about about what cool powers means. So I'm imagining, cool powers, you can fly, you can,
let's say it's Superman.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of responsibility. I don't know if I'm
a lot of responsibility, and
we'd be terrible superheroes.
Terrible, I'm imagining
you as a superhero. Like, you at like,
I wouldn't be terrible if I had the powers. What are you talking about?
I'm saying your work ethic. No offense. We both have bad. You don't both have to have bad work ethics. But like, think about us writing a script. How long it takes to write something. I'm imagining you you see the whatever your version of the bat signal is. The Christian.
I'm imagining if I had superpowers,
like Commissioner Gordon's super calling,
hearing,
and you're like, fuck,
super X-ray vision, all the super things. Mm-hmm. I think I would also, with that, I would get super motivation.
Oh,
so I think I would have a different work ethic than I have now.
You think Superman?
Not that I have a terrible work ethic.
No, I'm not
by
saying
the way.
That, but compared to Superman,
he doesn't have. But
you can't be on the clock all the time.
But I would if I had to. That's the point. So would you? Anyone would if they had to.
That I'm saying, it would now. The way if you frame it like that, it sounds like a burden to have these powers.
It does. It also sounds like a burden to be a Ghostbuster. And a lot.
No, Ghostbusters fun. You got you have the packs and you do the thing. As long as you don't, there are certain rules you have to follow. But it's like being an exterminator. I'm sure
fun.
That's a very.
Do you know scary being a Ghostbuster? You're thinking of
scary.
You're thinking of the cartoon.
You're
of Slimer.
Well, you're
or
thinking of real Ghostbusters.
I'm trying to.
What's scary about it? What's the scariest thing?
You have to deal with these haunted places all
Big
the time.
Deal. You have ecto whatevers that can you have the tools to deal with it. It's you just point it. I never understood why that should be so scary. I mean, it's scary only because in
still
the,
scary. You still have to walk into one of these old haunted houses and deal with.
I wouldn't be that scared if I had a pack of stuff that could zap a ghost and to put one in a containment unit.
All right. Well, I guess we're both saying we'd rather be Ghostbusters than superheroes
for different reasons
because we're lazy, basically. All right. You want to finish the letter?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Ben. I enjoy the show and how your genuine conversations humanize your fellows in show business, Ben the teacher. What a great thank you, Ben. I really appreciate that, and that's. And I agree with him. You know, I've had that experience with certain people that I've just seen their names on podcasts and thought, I kind of know who that is.
Yeah.
I can understand making an assumption about somebody like Louis Guzman, who then, turns out to be.
He's got a lot of depth, that guy.
Yeah. Speaking of shows, Christian and I are procrastinating writing. We're supposed to be writing something. For and with Louis at the moment, which has been a really fun experience. We're just dragging our feet. Anyway.
So thank you to Ben the teacher. I also like how you call yourself Ben the teacher.
Yeah.
I think we should all do that. Didn't they used to do that back in the day?
Yeah.
Like
Bartleby the Scrivener.
Like Joseph the Shepherd.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Justin the Podcaster.
Yeah. That's a little, that's not, doesn't sound as good as Ben the teacher, but.
Justin the part-time Ghostbuster.
Yeah, because, also ghostbusting, that sounds like it might be a full-time job, too. I mean, you get a call at 3 in the morning. If you see a ghost and it's, coming at you.
I think you could schedule. I think it's a 40-hour-a-week job.
I think they were always getting calls. What's her face? Annie Potts is so good in that movie.
Annie Potts. Ghostbusters, what's your emergency?
Is that good?
It's good.
Ghostbusters... No, you didn't get any calls.
Well, thanks again to Ben, and thanks again to Beanie Feldstein for being our guest. And
thanks to Ben Platt, too, just for existing.
Yes, thanks to Ben Platt, and thanks to Jonah for having a cool sister and helping shape her, I'm sure.
Yeah, and Sharon and Rich.
Sharon and Rich, yeah. Thanks to the whole Feldstein clan.
Yeah, they're the best, and we love them. So,
and if you guys want to write into the show, our email address is lifeisshort@wondery.com.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-boom.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long. It is produced by you, Christian Long. And also,
Megan Monaco. Senior producer is Michelle.
Mish.
Lands.
Audio engineer is Sergio.
Enriquez. Executive producers are Marshall Louis and Hernan Lopez for...
Wondery. Oh. Stay tuned for a very, very special voice memo brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer.
Bud Light Seltzer. What do you think?
Are you recording?
Strawberry. Jealous?
Sounded like you're recording.
Are you jealous?
Yeah, I am a little jealous.
I'm not recording.
It looks really cold, too.
Ice cold.
Can I try one?
No.
Why?
Get your own.
You don't want little remnants of food on the...
No, this is all mine.
Is it cold?
The coldest. And guess what?
What?
Only 100 calories.
Hey, guys. When they say enjoy responsibly, what do they mean?
To be responsible, don't drive, don't operate a plane or a blimp.
Heavy machinery.
Don't cause a fight.
Don't cause a fight? Yeah, all those things.
Don't be an idiot.
So is it fair to say we're enjoying responsibly right now?
Yeah.
We're just sitting here watching the sunset?
Yeah.
All right. Birds, you hear the birds.
Yeah. Enjoy responsibly.
We're not chasing the birds.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Or Missouri.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and barmates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplished something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.